Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. The last couple weeks, we've been interviewing, well, the creative genius behind Ellen McHenry's Basement Workshop. She's a textbook author of Rocks and Dirt, The Elements, Mapping the World. And Ellen has summarized the work of a geomorphologist. Christian Smoot, for over 30 years with the U.S. Navy, was mapping the ocean floors, and he's written a lot about the data that contradicts plate tectonics. So to conclude this series, welcome back Ellen McHenry. Hello, Ellen.
Thanks, although this time it's long distance all the way from Pennsylvania.
That's right. The first two programs, Ellen, so very encouraging to realize that it's not just us creationists who point out the problems with plate tectonics. There are a lot of experts who realize the theory is in crisis.
That's true, and that's one of the main things I want to get across here in my summary, is that this is not like Christians versus secular issue. This is inside the secular community. There are a lot of people that have realized there's something majorly wrong with plate tectonics.
So to wrap up, let's go through Smoot's observations. I like how you've presented them in terms of the oceans, the three largest oceans, the Atlantic, Indian, and Pacific. The oceans, of course, they flow into each other, as with the Arctic and the Southern Oceans. But we'll stick with the big three by area. They're the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean. And let's summarize what Smoot observes that brings him to doubt plate tectonics.
Sure. Let's start with the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
By the plate tectonics theory, no continental type rocks like granites, limestones, things you find on the continent should be found on that mid-ocean ridge, that mountain range that runs along the middle of the ocean.
So, Ellen, for people who are not looking at a map of the ocean floor right now or who might not be real familiar, certainly we know that the Atlantic Ocean separates North and South America from Europe and Africa. Actually, when I graduated high school in 1977, a public high school in New Jersey. Ellen, we went to the beach, you know, the senior prom, and then the next day you go to the beach.
Right.
And I asked my fellow classmates, a couple of them, what body of water is this that we're swimming in? They could not answer. They said the ocean. I said, yeah, what ocean? We were only a few miles from Atlantic City. They did not know it was the Atlantic Ocean. That's how bad some of our geography teaching is today. But the Atlantic Ocean running north and south, thousands of miles, and if we were to look below the water, there's a mountain range, right, that runs the length of
right.
the Atlantic Ocean.
Right. Nobody knew it was there for the history of the world until the late 1800s when they were running a cable across, and suddenly you needed less cable, and they thought, wow, there must be something that's sitting high on the ocean floor so the cable doesn't have to drop so low. And that was the first indication they had that there was something in the middle of the Atlantic that was a mountain of some type. And,
of course, now
you can go on Google Earth, we can all see it. It's this mountain range that runs down the middle.
Yeah, it's a major mountain range. In fact, we call it the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, but it's part of a greater system. One of the greatest geological features on the surface of the Earth, the Mid-Oceanic Ridge. And it's this continuous ridge that wraps around the Earth like a seam on a baseball. It truly is astounding, over 40,000 miles long. So you just said that on that ridge, they're finding, what, the kind of rocks you find on a continent?
Right. And plate tectonics says that that ridge is the result of seafloor spreading so that you would find new rock material on that ridge and then it kind of goes out like a conveyor belt towards the continent. So all the old rocks, the continental rocks, would be far away from the ridge. So this stuff along the ridge, supposedly there's magma coming up And that would be where your really fresh, young, new rocks are.
So the mantle, they imagine these hot plumes. We've done shows on that. You and I have talked about that.
Right.
There's
right.
so much evidence against, and there's so many experts who point out you can't have hot plumes rising up through the mantle. But at any rate, they believe there are hot plumes rising up. And at this point on the, they call them seafloor spreading centers, that the magma rises up and then goes horizontal and pushes the plates to the east and to the west. And so, therefore, when that rock hardens, that's sort of like the day the rock was born, you know, based on radiometric dating. When was a rock born? Well, when it hardens, that hardening of mantle rock should have nothing like we find on the continents. It should just be brand new ocean crust.
Right. And that's another point he makes over and over again in his book, is that they shouldn't find any old rocks by the radiometric dating method. They shouldn't be anything that's over 200 million years, I think they say.
Mm.
And the fact is that they find rocks all the time that are on that scale up to maybe 800, 900, 1,000, even a billion years old, according to the radiometric dating.
And so there's a problem in science, selection bias, where you get all this data and you throw out 90% of it and you take the 10% that supports your model. So
that's exactly what they're doing, yes.
Yeah, so as far as radiometrically dating the rocks at the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and as far as finding types of rocks like continental rocks, Smoot writes about colleagues that have tried to publish their papers regarding the continental type rocks they find on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and they're not getting their papers published.
That's what's happening, apparently, yes. In fact, Mr. Smoot has heard stories about this. He's seen it himself, and he's also had colleagues report to him that people have actually seen these scientists picking through the rocks. They'll dredge up a whole bunch of rocks to the surface and then pick through them and throw out the rocks that don't suit their theory and keep the rocks that do.
Right. This is a pattern, and it's a part of the bias, our pride, our lack of humility, and our desire to keep our paycheck flowing, that we want to agree with the currently accepted theory, whatever's politically correct within science. And so there's the selection bias. How about in the far North Atlantic, where Smoot has studied the northern portion of the MAR, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge? It's called the Mohns Ridge. Could you describe what he observes there?
Yeah, now this is might be a minor point to those of us that aren't experts on the ocean floor, but apparently it's a big deal to him. If you imagine this part of the ridge as being a series of smaller mountain chains that all run parallel, and then the one in the middle, the main ridge, is offset by 30 degrees. Maybe if you'd imagine lining up seven pencils all in a row, and then you take that middle one, and you pick it up, and you turn it a bit, and set it back down on top of the others.
Yeah.
This is a big problem, that you have one of them that is not in line with the others.
Well, there's so much of that, and we'll get to it, including when we get to the Indian Ocean, the Southern Atlantic, where the geography of it, if you have a spreading center, seafloor spreading, and you have new ocean crust that's being formed and it's being pushed out to the east and to the west, then the features based on the physics of that should be roughly parallel and symmetrical. But he points out at Mohns Ridge, you've got one of these mountain ranges, these chains of mountains that are, it's off by 30 degrees. And so if you think about it, I mean, the ridge would have to be spreading at a dramatically different rate at the one end of that mountain chain as compared to the beginning of it. And yet the ridge itself is not giving any indication that something dramatically different is happening 100 miles up as compared to where that mountain chain begins.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense tectonically.
Right.
And then you get down just a little bit below that, you come to Iceland, which is really a very unique place on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, because Iceland sits on that Mid-Atlantic Ridge. Mm. So right there, the MAR is at the surface.
So yeah,
it's we can actually observe it.
Yes, and Ellen, if people have never seen it, it's a really neat thing to see, the Mid-Oceanic Ridge coming up onto land. And we include this in our video, Real Science Radio Hydroplate Theory video, about an hour and 18 minutes in. And so here is the Mid-Atlantic Ridge coming right up onto the surface. Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty neat. So this gives us a way to study the ridge without having to go deep underwater. So you'd think that we would be able to detect spreading. We'd be able to study it right there at the surface. But in fact, there's really no measurable spreading going on there, as far as I understand.
Well, Walt Brown brought this up with Bob Dietz, and he and Dietz were friends, associates. They met for, one weekday afternoon per week for a whole school year, and they were going to debate each other. Bob Dietz he's one of the fathers of plate tectonics. He coined the term seafloor spreading. And there was a big splash about their debate in the Arizona Republic. Dietz taught at Arizona State University. And they're going to have this debate. And then just before the debate, Bob Dietz cancels, which is so unfortunate. What a resource the world would have had if that debate had happened. But Walt would point out to Bob, here's a perfect place. Just take the equipment that you use to measure such things and to see if they're changing. It's called a total station. It's an industry generic term. Many manufacturers, or a total station theodolite, a TST, and they could easily measure movement and spreading in Iceland, but they don't seem interested in doing it.
Yeah, I don't know why not. It seems like a great research opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Another problem that Smoot sees in the North Atlantic region, a little bit in the south, but mainly he focuses on the North Atlantic, is that there are a lot of fracture lines that don't go the way that plate tectonic theory says they should. Mm. So if you imagine the mid-ocean ridge going down the middle, kind of north-south, there's these crack lines or fracture zones that are running east-west. And this is very easy to see on any good map on a globe that has the ocean floor there, or on Google Earth. It's very easy to see these lines going perpendicular to the ridge.
Yeah, and Ellen, the way the theory of plate tectonics works, the seafloor spreading, it doesn't happen the whole length of the major axis, north and south through the Atlantic Ocean, all at the same rate. It happens at different rates at different places along that ridge, that axis. And so because it's happening in one place and not another, they say that explains those perpendicular cracks that are running either to the east or the west of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, those fracture zones.
So that these fracture zones are places where it's spread a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit the other place.
Okay.
The problem is that there are a lot of these fracture zones that are not perpendicular. And in fact, there are some up in the northern part of the Atlantic that actually run north-south. There's a lot of them that run parallel to the ridge.
Yeah.
And that's completely against the theory. There's also fracture lines that curve. They intersect each other.
Yeah.
They go off in Vs or Ws. They kind of splay at the ends. And there's just no explaining that in plate tectonic theory.
I'm looking right now on Google Earth, which is one of the most wonderful tools, you know, ever developed for mankind to study the Earth.
And if it had existed in 1966, we wouldn't have plate tectonic theory today. They were able to look at it back then.
It would not have been accepted because there's so much that directly contradicts the model. And Christian Smoot, his work, 32 years mapping the ocean floor for the U.S. Navy, as we've already mentioned, it was classified top secret because we wanted our nuclear sub pilots to have an advantage over Russian submarine pilots. And so we knew what the ocean floors looked like. And it was only gradually later that these maps were released to the public. They were declassified. And sadly, that was after plate tectonics had gotten a stranglehold on the science.
Right. It was too late. Once the theory was accepted officially, then evidence just didn't matter anymore.
Right. It's too big to fail. So as I'm looking at these fracture zones, in so many ways, whether they're curved or whether they're parallel to the ridge, they're supposed to be perpendicular, whether they intersect, there's so many contradictions. And when you think about how they say they're formed and you just look at them and you realize, well, that couldn't do what they're claiming.
Right. In fact, if you trace the ridge above Iceland all the way up to where it stops in the Arctic, there are, from what I can see, no fracture lines at all. So what, the seafloor didn't spread there all at once or didn't spread or what's going on there? I don't know.
Right, right, exactly. And of course, with Dr. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, this series that you and I are doing, it's in the context of understanding the Earth in the aftermath of the global flood. And Dr. Walt Brown, he's got his PhD from MIT. He had the insight that, and it really is as the Bible tells us, I believe, that the water for the global flood came from below the crust, below the terra firma, below the firmament. So the fountains of the great deep broke forth, and that water came up, and the mid-oceanic ridge, it's the scar, the aftermath of that crack that circled the entire globe. And that's why there even is a mid-oceanic ridge. I mean, if you ask somebody, why is the Earth cracked, 40,000-mile-long crack, and why does it stop when it runs into itself in the Indian Ocean? Most people are unaware of the global nature of these features.
Okay, one little side note I thought was interesting when I was reading Smoot's book was that he thinks that it's very possible that these fracture zones were there before the Mid-Atlantic Ridge formed, just with the way that they cross and things. But mm-hmm. he doesn't have any mechanism to explain that.
Right.
So he thinks this could be true, but he's scratching his head going, how could this have happened, though? And he really doesn't have any idea. Whereas the hydroplate theory says that's exactly what happened, and it has a mechanism
wow.
consistent with all the laws of physics, and it's just really a good explanation.
Yeah. So when we're done, we'll go to the Indian Ocean next, Ellen. But when we're done, let's mention a couple of the other theories that are trying to make sense of what's happening on the ocean floor. And Smoot, he goes with something called surge tectonics. But what's so fascinating and what is so rewarding is that the hydroplate theory, when you have this concept that there was water below the crust that came up and flooded the Earth, that concept, it turns out that it answers hundreds of serious and very difficult questions about the nature of our world and even our solar
yes.
system. It answers hundreds of these. And you don't have to tweak Walt's theory. You don't have to make unexpected secondary, tertiary assumptions to keep accounting for the data. It's like the fundamental concept of the water coming up from below the crust. It just unfolds from cause to effect. And it's really so encouraging. It helps to increase your faith the more you understand the world you look at.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at the Indian Ocean now.
All right.
And the biggest issue in the Indian Ocean is something called the Triple Junction.
Mm.
So it's a place where two sections of mid-ocean ridge meet, and they form like a T-shape. So if the ridge is where seafloor spreading is occurring, then how can it be spreading one direction along the vertical part of the T and another direction along the horizontal part of the T?
Yes.
It can be spreading at the same time in both directions.
And there's so much area, and there's so much, a massive chunk of the ocean floor there looks beautifully undisturbed. Walt Brown points this out. Brian Nickel then in Real Science Radio and our hydroplate theory, we point this out, how this is a flat-out contradiction to plate tectonics, and it's good to have someone with the qualifications of a Chris Smoot, and then there are all the many other scientists. And we list them as an example at kgov.com/plate tectonics. We give an example list of geologists rejecting plate tectonics. And this triple junction, this is one of many powerful arguments. Ellen, many of these are killers. They kill the theory. An individual right. piece of evidence like this kills plate tectonics. Seafloor spreading is not happening at these mid-oceanic ridges. So they ignore the triple junction.
Right. And it's actually even worse than that. There are three triple junctions. There's not just one to explain away.
Right.
There's two more they need to explain away. One in the South Atlantic and one in the Pacific.
Right. And they could say, you know, this is just a little mystery, only it's not little, it's massive. It's a massive feature of the surface of the Earth. It's massive. It just happens
right.
to be below the ocean. And there's three of them.
Right. So Smoot says that right there, that should just kill the theory, just that alone.
Yeah. And thanks to the Christians who corrected the geocentric model of the solar system, right, that goes back to Plato. He really popularized it, that the sun orbits the Earth and the planets orbit the Earth. And so it was Christians, creationists like Copernicus and Isaac Newton and Kepler. These guys, Kepler, saw that there's something wrong with the orbit of Venus. I think it was Venus. There's something wrong. It's not exactly where it should be. And he didn't ignore the anomaly. He pressed and he pressed and he pressed until he understood the elliptical orbits. And so this is a problem. This is an anomaly. And mainstream science, what they do with it is they ignore it. And if they'd focus on these triple junctions, they would see that their theory is false. But again, it's too big to fail.
Right. And there's another anomaly in the Indian Ocean called the 90 East Ridge. Mm. It's another mountain ridge. It's not connected to the mid-ocean ridges at all. And it runs pretty much straight up and down, north-south. It's kind of right underneath India, a little bit to the east of India.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now on Google Earth. It's an astounding feature to look at. It's astounding.
It is, and I really had never heard of it until I started reading hydroplate theory. Nobody had ever pointed it out. And I thought, why didn't I ever hear of this before?
It's 3,000 miles long. Yes. It's more than 3,000. It's almost straight as an arrow.
It is. It's unbelievably straight. And there's no fracture zones running out from it at all.
Right.
And Smoot says, what's going on here?
Right.
They just don't talk about it because there's just no way to explain it. Although they do have to make it into a plate boundary, there's kind of some different things happening on either side. And so they know that there's no seafloor spreading there. They know that there's something out there. So they define it as a plate boundary and they call each side of it something a little bit different. They have to work it into the theory somehow. But they really don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. When we recognize that there is a feature like this, I mean, its length and the fact that straight lines are not real big in nature. You know, nature doesn't give you a lot of straight lines.
No, that's why it's so shocking. It's straight.
Yeah. And for it to be 3,000 miles long, kids should learn about this in grammar school, elementary school. But we don't. And I think what happens is the things that scream out against the accepted theories are ignored.
Right, and that's one of my biggest problems with globes. I really hate this when I work with kids in my classes.
Hmm.
I look for globes that actually have the ocean floor on it. They're really hard to find. I mean, if you start looking at kids' globes, they all have just blue. You come to the ocean and it's just flat blue.
Right, right.
And you're not even aware of these features unless you study them when you're older, so kids aren't aware of this.
And the hydroplate theory has such an elegant, fabulous explanation for 90 East Ridge. And Ellen, I realize we're doing a series on the evidence against plate tectonics, but time and time again, I want to break out into an explanation of the hydroplate theory, but really that's been done by Walt Brown on the internet. And his fabulous book, In the Beginning. In fact, the 9th edition is available in a single PDF online at rsr.org/9. That's it, just the number 9 for the 9th edition. You can get the entire PDF. but also Brian Nickel in his YouTube channel. What a fabulous job he does. Ellen, if I recall, it's not only part of his overall tutorial of the hydroplate theory. I think he has a separate video on 90 East Ridge.
Yes, that would definitely be worth your while to go and find out the hydroplate explanation for the ridge. It's brilliant.
Super.
Okay, so in the Pacific Ocean, the biggest problem that Smoot sees right off the bat is the lack of a distinct spreading center. Mm. So in the Atlantic, we have a very sharply defined ridge. It has these fracture zones, and it's kind of cut up into chunks, but it's very distinct along the center. In the Pacific Ocean, we can trace the ridge up through the eastern Pacific, but it's not as distinct. And in fact, they don't even use the word ridge. They have to use the word rise.
The East Pacific
spread out
rise.
And more shallow. Mm-hmm. East Pacific rise. You can't even really call it a ridge. And he sees this as a big, big problem. Number one, that it's so spread out and flat. And number two, the fact that it's on the edge of the ocean. It's all the way over on the eastern side.
So
Mid-Atlantic, it's in the mid-Atlantic.
So what that would mean
on the east.
Yeah, so what that would mean then is everything going to the west is all going out. It's half of the earth,
right.
Practically.
That's half the globe that is being pushed
on
by
one side.
Spreading center.
Yeah, on one side. Yeah, it's the geography of it doesn't make sense.
No, the geography doesn't make sense at all. That's a big problem.
And maybe if they were laying a Pacific, Trans-Pacific cable at the same time, they might have figured this out. Or like you said earlier, if Google Earth had been available in 1966, plate tectonic theory would not have been even proposed probably. And certainly if Smoot's maps were available back then, they would have recognized that this doesn't make sense in their model.
No. And another thing that Smoot sees that doesn't make sense is something that he calls megatrends.
Mm.
So a megatrend is when you play dot to dot with ocean floor features.
Like you connect a line of volcanoes like the Hawaiian Islands.
Right. So a line of volcanoes might connect, though, to an earthquake belt or to a fracture zone. You're allowed to pick and choose among, it doesn't have to be all island chains or it doesn't have to be all earthquake belts. You can connect these where they look like they're connected. So if you run along an imaginary line, these features will line up along this imaginary line.
Because you see something is going on, whether they're island chains, like you said, geos, that's these flat-topped seamounts, ridges, fault lines. Even where there are earthquakes, many earthquakes, you line them up, and Smoot calls these a megatrend, and he says something is going on or something has occurred right here along this line, and he sees a number of megatrends.
Right, and the problem with these megatrends is that they'll go all the way across the Pacific Ocean, and even further, they'll go right up onto continents. There's one that goes all the way into North America and into Yellowstone Park. And there's some, he says, that go almost around the globe. And there's just simply no explanation in the plate tectonic model.
And then how about at the ends of the megatrends? When a megatrend ends, does it just end in a terminal stop? That's it?
Some do, but some don't. Some will kind of splay and they'll go off into a V or a Y and they'll create several subtrends off the end, and there's no good explanation for that either.
Yeah, no good explanation in the plate tectonics model. And so these megatrends, when plate tectonics tells you we understand the basic mechanisms for the surfacing of the earth, we understand it. And then you look at those mechanisms and you see that there are major features, regional, global features that contradict their mechanisms, then that's a problem with the theory. And those problems, if you take a course in plate tectonics at, say, Virginia Tech, those problems should be front and center. They should say, here's a theory and here are problems with the theory. If the theory is correct, it's going to be able to answer these problems. But if it cannot answer these problems, then the theory is not correct. That would be an honest look at the theory. but that's not done.
Yes, right. And that's how science progresses, because that thing that's wrong is a clue to being more accurate, to getting about your... Mm. It's a clue to improving your theory and making it more in line with reality.
Mm. So then, Ellen, we're still in the Pacific. There are the trenches. Most of the ocean trenches are in the Pacific. They're incredibly deep, like the Mariana Trench is, what, over 36,000 feet deep. It's deeper into the ocean floor than Mount Everest is above sea level. But Christian Smoot, he sees real problems in these trenches and thinks that they also falsify plate tectonics.
Yeah, there's lots of very deep trenches in the Pacific, although they're not all equally as deep. And this is a problem for plate tectonics, because supposedly these trenches are where the ocean floor is going down, being pulled under, subducting. Now, for that to be true, these trenches have to be continuous, kind of all connected, because the ocean floor is all going down basically at once. So if we can prove that the trenches are what they call discrete segments, then
which they obviously are, right? And Smoot points out, and his maps are even better than what we can generally see, but the trenches are discrete segments. They're not one long, continuous subduction into the mantle.
Right. So if the trenches are all at different depths, you can't have one part of the seafloor going down at one depth and another at another depth. That doesn't make sense. They all have to be providing kind of a smooth ride for the ocean floor, so to speak.
Yeah.
And these different depths is a serious problem for the theory.
Yeah, and Walt Brown does a great job analyzing and making predictions about what we're going to find at the bottom and the sediments at the bottom of the trenches. And Smoot talks about the sides of the trenches, the cliffs, the ledges, and the side cracks that nobody ever talks about, all of which are evidence against plate tectonics. So then how about earthquake patterns, Ellen?
Yeah, earthquake patterns are a big problem as well. And although Smoot's not an expert in earthquake science, he does dabble in it. That's part of his field of study. And so he looks at a lot of earthquake data. And what he sees is that the earthquakes are on the wrong side of these subduction zones.
Mm.
You should have more earthquakes on the landward side. And we do see that in some places, but most of the time they're on the seaward side. So unfortunately, you can kind of cherry pick the data there, but there's a lot that are on the wrong side.
Right. And plus, as we've already mentioned, there are so many earthquakes that are not on plate boundaries, but they're inside of the plates. And there are also volcanoes inside of the plates. And the hotspot model, we might as well mention that now also, the hotspot model has been argued against by so many leading volcanologists even. We did a whole series on it last year, Fred Williams and I, and not only by people like Smoot and those who are against plate tectonics.
Yes, the intraplate or inside the plate volcanoes and earthquakes are a big issue, and Smoot talks about that quite a bit, and also the hot spots. He thinks that's completely bogus, and you've already covered that very thoroughly on your shows, and he would completely agree. It's bogus.
And then we're about out of time. Ellen, you have a quote from Chris Smoot, a list of 29 geological and geophysical data sets remains to be explained by plate tectonics proponents. If one recalcitrant fact is enough to wreck a theory, how about 29?
Well, the way you deal with the data is you either ignore it, or you cherry pick through it, or you just persecute anyone who presents all the data.
Wow. And that's how plate tectonics proponents have been dealing with this, as observed by Chris Smoot. So,
as
Ellen,
observed by Chris Smoot inside the secular community.
Wow. So, Ellen, thank you so much. And what theory, since he rejects plate tectonics and he's not a hydroplate theory, what theory does Chris Smoot support?
Well, he and a number of his colleagues support something called surge tectonics. So this thing that's surging is magma. Underneath the crust, they think there might be long channels of magma that flow around the Earth kind of in an easterly direction.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they will circle up and make like a vortex pattern. If you look at some of the ocean floor features, they kind of look, if you play dot to dot with them, like they make a circle, kind of in a little spiral pattern I call vortex.
Mm-hmm.
So they think maybe that happens sometimes. But the features of all the features on the planet, ocean and on the continents, would be explained by the surging of magma at various times in the history of the Earth. The magma would come closer to the surface and sometimes break out and form these features. But they believe that the continents have basically been in place where they are. Mm. There could have been some movement, but nothing like what plate tectonics proposes.
All right. So that's surge tectonics. And on our website, we have dozens of experts who are old Earth geologists who reject plate tectonics. Just kgov.com/plate tectonics. And you'll see, including Smoot, who was with the U.S. Naval Oceanographic Office for so many years. And there's a lot of experts here. So what it's telling us is that it's not just young Earth creationists who see the powerful evidence against plate tectonics. And Ellen, as you and I have mentioned, a lot of this evidence also then argues against something called catastrophic plate tectonics, which was the Christian effort to take the theory, the secular theory of plate tectonics, and put it into the Bible, sort of like putting the theory of evolution into Genesis. And that was a catastrophe. We call that theistic evolution. And now we're in the, and now we're at the second catastrophe, putting the secular plate tectonics into Genesis and calling it catastrophic plate tectonics, when in reality, it's the fountains of the great deep model of the flood.
Right. And I think that's going to be a mistake in the long run, because I think that the secular community, eventually, they're going to realize that these issues are big enough that they need to change course. And I wouldn't be surprised if they really be, I wouldn't be surprised if they start seriously considering surge tectonics or maybe another theory somebody's going to come up with in the next decade or two.
Oh, yeah.
Go on Wikipedia and read about plate tectonics, the old theory that we don't believe anymore. And I'm worried that they're going to move on before the Christian community moves on.
Wow, that's a great point. And you know what they did with geocentrism? Even though it came from Plato and Aristotle and the secular world, in fact, when the Vatican objected to heliocentrism, it wasn't because of the Bible. It was because it contradicted Plato. And when Galileo did his dialogues, and in one of them he had Simpleton, well, Simpleton was Plato, but the Pope thought it was the Pope, you know. But this geocentrism eventually was blamed on the church, and who knows, evolution could even one day be blamed on the church, and so could plate tectonics.
Yeah, they're trying to pin flat Earth on us. So never underestimate their ability to spin things.
Right.
If they can, they will spin it to try to make us look like fools.
Yes.
So I'd like to encourage everybody to really look at the scientific arguments, look at the data whenever, wherever you can, look at the evidence being presented and weigh it carefully, and take a look at the hydroplate theory and consider its scientific merits as opposed to plate tectonics, and see if it does a better job of explaining all these pieces of evidence that Smoot himself has come up with.
Yes, and Ellen, when you have one observation, one theory, and it answers many seemingly unrelated problems, that gives a lot of credibility to that theory, and that is something the hydroplate theory does. It answers so many disparate problems. They look like they're completely discrete, separate, and it turns out one model answers dozens of otherwise intractable problems.
Yes, that's very true. So the shame of it is that the politically correct views in the secular community don't allow them to explore really exciting creative options like the hydroplate theory. Anything that says global flood is stamped anathema, and they can't look at it. Whereas we're free. We can look at it and it's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not allowed to think the thoughts. They certainly couldn't Google. I mean, if they Googled evidence for the global flood, they'd probably get fired.
Probably true.
Yeah. So, Ellen McHenry, it's been so enjoyable having you bring us through the life's work of Christian Smoot with the powerful evidence he's amassed simply by mapping the ocean floors against plate tectonics. Thank you, Ellen.
Sure, no problem. And don't forget that the summary that I wrote will hopefully be posted on RSR, and people can read it for themselves. You don't have to take my word for it.
That's super. Okay, that's just perfect. So thank you, Ellen McHenry. And okay. Yes, rsr.org/Ellen. That's rsr.org/Ellen will give you a list of not only this series, but the other RSR Global Flood resources from Ellen McHenry. So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams in Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.